Welcome to the first episode of Season 2 of Book Spectrum. We kick off the new season with a man who has written quite a few books. Whether it be about politics, schools of thought, conspiracies, or maybe conspiracies about John F. Kennedy's assassination. You might say, what makes this Fred Litwin so unique? How many JFK conspiracy theories or debunkings can we read anymore? Well, hold on. I always have something up my sleeve. Fred Litwin is a former JFK conspiracy theorist who is now debunking them and agrees with the single convicted shooter. That's Lee Harvey Oswald, in case you might not remember. Fred once authored I Was a Teenage JFK Conspiracy Freak. We'll talk about his new book today, On the Trail of Delusion, Jim Garrison, The Great Accuser. Welcome to Book Spectrum, Fred Litwin.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here, too. And there are plenty of books you wrote. You can find those on Amazon and all around. We're going to focus on this one. We are in an era of conspiracy theories that have gone mainstream. Even when they're debunked, news agencies put their reputations on the line to support them. This was unheard of a while ago, and it was not the case in the longer past. Alternative theories, even if they were plausible or maybe even true, they barely earned enough mainstream attention, hence the JFK conspiracy theorists. Still, perhaps the most fascinating strings of conspiracy theories are the ones involving the assassination of President John Kennedy. First off, it would seem having more than just one shooter is plausible. That's for starters, right, Fred?
Yep. That's one of the main things that people right from the start really have thought, well, you know, there can't just be one shooter. There's got to be multiple shooters. And from the start, they were looking for reasons and how to explain what they thought were holes or errors in the evidence. But the closer you get to it, the more rational you look at it, you realize that there was only one shooter.
Let's take you backwards for a little bit, Fred. What fascinated you about that murder, that particular assassination, when you started thinking about alternative theories? I'm going to say that first, because back then there were a lot of alternative theories and conspiracies over it.
Well, it was watching the Zapruder film on television in 1975. I was 18 years old. I was sitting at home in Montreal, and late night, Geraldo Rivera showed the Zapruder film for the first time on national TV, and like many other people, I was just shocked. It was a horrifying video film, and then to see JFK's head go back and to the left, that famous back and to the left, made me want a question, made me think of how can we explain this? There must be some sort of explanation. Why don't people believe he was shot from the front? And so that sent me on my quest to learn more about the JFK assassination.
A lot of these things start with Geraldo Rivera, don't they?
he was very avant-garde back then in the 1970s.
Well, he does bring in some cool stuff, I got to tell you. I mean, the Capone vault may have been a failure, but at least he tried and dug his way in there.
Yep. He was the show to watch back then.
When was it, though, Fred, when you thought, hey, wait a minute, it was Oswald, no question?
Well, it took me a number of years. I mean, that led me on a quest to do a lot of research, and I realized I actually quickly found an explanation for why JFK's head goes back and to the left. It was a neuromuscular spasm, and his autopsy x-rays and photographs proved that. But it wasn't until the early 1990s, when I was living in England, that I really sort of changed my mind, and that was because I read all the documentation from the second investigation. And when I read those volumes, I couldn't believe all the scientific testing that had been done, and all of it proved there was one gunman.
It's not often a conspiracy theorist, Fred, becomes a conspiracy theory debunker. You have done some serious research into this case, and you ultimately focused on the accusations of District Attorney Jim Garrison. You visited every structure in the U.S. that contained papers related to him. You really dug into this guy, and of course, that's where the Trail of Delusion title comes from, Jim Garrison, the Great Accuser.
Well, when I included the story of Jim Garrison in my last book, but there were some people, some of the conspiracy theorists on the web said, well, you know, you really haven't gone through all the latest documents that have come out in the 1990s on Jim Garrison, and they prove you wrong. And I had gone through some of them, but I had never really actually gone through Jim Garrison's papers. And fortunately, they were all online at the National Archives. And as I started going through the papers, I was struck by how silly the whole investigation was. There was memo after memo after memo that was completely sort of crazy. So I started putting all those memos aside, all the crazy memos, And after I'd gotten up to 30, 40, 50 crazy memos, I said, you know what? There's a book here. There's a whole new book, a whole new way of looking at Jim Garrison, because his own evidence, his own memos are so crazy. And so that's how I started to decide I had to go see every Garrison document I could find in the United States.
On Book Spectrum with me is Fred Litwin. He's the author of On the Trail of Delusion, Jim Garrison, the Great Accuser. Garrison was a trusted prosecutor at the time. He turned the JFK assassination from an investigation into, well, maybe you could call it a circus, by buying into some of those conspiracy theories. Still, as we mentioned before, many were plausible in a hypothetical manner. Still, with the evidence leaning toward a lone shooter, what made such a man delve into the thoughts of conspiracy?
Well, Jim Garrison was an impatient man, and he had gone after, he wanted power. He had gone after everybody in New Orleans. He had gone after the mayor. He had gone after the police. He went after the judges. And after a while, in 1966, I think he was bored. He had gone after everybody. And all of a sudden, all these conspiracy books were coming out, and he wasn't immune. He started reading them and realized, oh, my God, there's a New Orleans connection to the JFK assassination. Because Oswald lived in New Orleans for 5 months prior to the assassination. And he sort of dug in with all those conspiracy books, and he unfortunately went right into the rabbit hole and never got himself out.
There's another thing, though. Motive. A lot of people had motive to kill JFK or to want him dead for some reason or another, and this goes to very powerful people.
There's no question. Look, the mob, for example, had a motive to kill Kennedy. He had gone after the mob. The problem with these theories is it's one thing to kill JFK. Can you cover it up? Because if you get caught killing JFK, then you're worse off than before. So you not only have to kill him, you have to cover it up. And I don't think the mob could have assured themselves that they could cover it up if they did it. And so that's why I just never believed that organizations like the mob killed JFK.
Then, of course, people throw out the CIA.
Yeah, the CIA. The CIA, you know, look, it would, you know, think of the repercussions, again, like the same thing, the repercussions to the CIA if they were implicated in the assassination. I mean, here's the thing. If you really wanted to kill Kennedy and you wanted to cover it up, why don't you do something through one of his mistresses? That way there would be an added incentive for the Kennedy family to actually cover it up themselves.
Well, there's an interesting point. See, now we're going down a rabbit hole, but of course you've debunked all of these.
Yeah, there's everywhere you look. I mean, this is actually a very simple case, and the evidence is so overwhelming on Oswald's guilt. So when you clear the cobwebs from your eyes and you look at all the evidence, particularly the evidence that conspiracy books don't like to talk about, it becomes so clear that Oswald did it. The evidence is so overwhelming that you begin to realize the conspiracy books are just completely silly.
Fred Litwin is with me. He's the author of On the Trail of Delusion, Jim Garrison, the Great Accuser. I want to put our listeners and myself here in Garrison's shoes, and I'm sure you've done that. One must also remember it's very tempting for a prosecutor to want to find out everything possible about a case. You don't want to put the wrong guy in jail, but sometimes you get overzealous putting the guy you think is the one, even though he may not be in jail, especially when the public's watching intently and you want to make a bigger name for yourself. Perhaps all this was a factor.
Well, and you know, he knew that there were a couple of leads from New Orleans, and that's what he started on. There were two leads. He started on those leads, and when they went nowhere, he could have quit the case and looked pretty good, but he decided to actually go and sort of manufacture evidence. And he charged an innocent gay man with killing Kennedy. He manufactured the evidence against him, and of course, it didn't work, and Clay Shaw was acquitted. And he ruined somebody's life. He ruined that poor man's life. And after Clay Shaw was acquitted, Garrison charged him with perjury. And it took Clay Shaw 4 years and a large part of his money, of his wealth, to get rid of all of these charges.
This is what we're seeing today with the Mueller investigation, and I'm sure we've had that with many others. Somebody gets accused of something just to get somebody else, and their name gets dragged through the mud, or somebody, an overzealous prosecutor, wants to make a name for himself, and he gives somebody the shaft because it's easy to do that. That was Clay Shaw. This is a guy that, as you said, really had nothing to do with the whole thing, maybe a couple of associations here and there, but it was all The evidence just didn't point to the guy, but Garrison was just intent on throwing this guy to the wolves. Why?
Yeah, Clay Shaw was a World War II hero. He had worked on the invasion of Normandy. He got medals from three different countries. He was a hero in New Orleans for building the International Trade Mart. He retired early in 1965 so he could focus on writing plays and restoring properties. And largely because he was gay and because he had the same first name as a supposed person of interest, Garrison seized on him as a suspect and then manufactured evidence against him. It's really a horrific case. And what makes it worse is that when Oliver Stone did his film JFK in 1991, he made Garrison the hero and he made Clay Shaw the evil villain. And so Shaw was victimized a second time.
Nobody really believes Oliver Stone movies anyway. He does everything for their dramatic and tries to create some bad guys where maybe there aren't any. And if there is a bad guy, like maybe you can consider that in the Nixon movie at the time, he makes him worse. He sort of demonizes people in the movies, but it's all about entertainment for that guy. But again, this gentleman, Clay Shaw, did not deserve the treatment he got, and even decades later.
He was a really good man. He didn't deserve it, and it's really a grave injustice. And what my book tries to do is not only tell the Clay Shaw story, but to tell the other stories, the other people that Garrison went after. He charged a man in California, Edgar Eugene Bradley, with also conspiring in the assassination of JFK. And years later, he had to apologize to him personally for doing that. So Garrison, you know, ruined many lives.
Did he think he was the good guy, or did he just know he knew what he was doing, or he knew he was doing something extremely wrong and just kept going at it?
He thought he was definitely on the right track. He really believed the CIA was behind the assassination. He thought he was on the right track, and he was willing to go anywhere. The problem was that he, being a conspiracy theorist, he was really easy to con. So there were a lot of con men who came into a life, a lot of investigators who fooled him with false evidence. And so many times he went into areas that no other prosecutor would go into. And I detail this all in my book. I mean, I've got some very funny stories in my book about what Garrison would believe. I mean, he had prisoners writing him letters from prison with all sorts of tips, and Garrison would believe them.
Well, they must sit around a table after lunch break or maybe shanking somebody for fun and saying, hey, let's send another letter to this guy. Or let's say we heard somebody say this in our cell.
I have a transcript of a tape recording of Garrison and some of his investigators, sort of a 4-hour meeting that they had to discuss the case. I have the transcript, and it's really funny. You read this, and these people were off the moon. I mean, they were talking the craziest conspiracy theories as if they were true.
Fred Litwin's with me. He's the author of On the Trail of Delusion, Jim Garrison, the Great Accuser. Let's go to another theory. The Russians. It's a very convenient one. Of course, back then it was the Soviets. These were our enemies back during that time. It was a long Cold War, and it is also very plausible, I think, the Soviets were involved and maybe try to convince people in intelligence to, let's say, make sure JFK is offed some way or another. That's another kind of hole that, again, a plausible one that Garrison went down.
It's plausible. The problem here is that right after the assassination, the Russians went to great lengths to assure the U.S. that they weren't involved. And the U.S. had NSA communications that they had intercepted from the Russians that indicated that the Russians were shocked and surprised and they weren't involved. I mean, a better theory that perhaps Castro was involved, because Kennedy had been really trying to kill Castro. And Castro knew that. And, of course, a theory was, did Castro respond to what he himself was going through? That's a very interesting theory. Nothing supports it, but it's an interesting theory.
Or did Russian agents maybe insert that idea in people's heads just to throw it around and make people scared of them a little bit more? I mean,
well,
they
you know,
do that.
I would say the only unanswered question in my mind is, did somebody in Dallas perhaps talk to Lee Harvey Oswald and perhaps tell him it might be a good idea for him to do that? Did somebody plant the idea in his head to go and kill Kennedy? I doubt it, because he was such a loner. He had no friends. He didn't talk to many people. But it certainly is a possibility.
And that's another thing. And that's going to fuel some conspiracy theorists. And believe me, Fred, there are so many of those things around about JFK even today, and we might even see some new ones popping up every once in a while, but we've not been without conspiracy theories since. This time, however, some, like the debunked Russian collusion hoax, and the Russians, not the Soviets, big difference, have gone mainstream. Where is it that respected news agencies don't check on things or try to at least tell people they're speculating rather than, again, without proof, rather than make it a mainstream story and kind of just push it into the American mindset?
Well, the problem right now is you have social media, and it's very, very easy for people to, because of tribalism, to find new conspiracy theories. Whether you're a truther or a birther or a QAnon or whatever, you can find other people on social media who think like you do. It's very tribalistic, and you don't have to listen to any mainstream media at all to get interested in conspiracy theory. And that's what makes it so dangerous.
What makes it more dangerous is a lot of these are plausible. I'm not talking about aliens trying to run the world, but it is plausible that you might see a small group of people around the world trying to control events. Again, possible, plausible. Is it proven? That's a tough one. But that's where the conspiracy theories come in. Then they figure out who it is and throw things around without proof. You also look at, again, with the Kennedy assassination, but there are other assassinations and other conspiracies when it came to running things. We talked about, of course, the Russian collusion hoax. It's plausible because at one point, Russia and Donald Trump did a lot of business together. So you put the two and two together, it equals five or six, and all of a sudden you get a conspiracy theory.
Yes, and look, there are some conspiracies. Al-Qaeda did conspire to bring down the World Trade Center.
Absolutely.
Watergate was a conspiracy. There was a conspiracy to kill Lincoln, although there was only one gunman. So sometimes, you know, there are conspiracies, but we have to, again, we have to use critical thinking to really understand what's going on and not go down rabbit holes of false conspiracies.
Right, there were a lot of conspiracies to kill Adolf Hitler, too. I remember all those, were a lot of them. One thing, and I wanted to just get into this, the whole conspiracy about Watergate. I never knew why Nixon's people thought they even needed Watergate. What were they thinking? The guy was going to win by a landslide anyway. Why were they trying to screw him later on? I don't know.
You know, they were, I don't know. You know, it's a good question. They were paranoid. Nixon was extremely paranoid, and he may have thought that perhaps Democrats had some sort of information on him or his brother and dealings with Harold Hughes, and they had to break in and see what information was in that safe. Again, he would have won the election handily, but the paranoia, that was his downfall.
That could have been, and I think we just came up with a new conspiracy theory. Somebody's going to jot this down and start looking things up. Fred Litwin is with me on Book Spectrum, the book on the trail of delusion, Jim Garrison, The Great Accuser. What can we all do to turn the tide so that our news media and people in general look for facts instead of opinion and untruths? And again, we have to respect the idea that people might go down a rabbit hole because of plausibility.
Yeah, I think that everybody has to learn how to think critically about issues and understand what are the better news sources, how to think about what's going on in the world. Logic is important. I mean, there's a whole variety of training that needs to go on in the schools to teach people not only history, but how to think about history and how to think about things. And it's not easy because, you were going back to basic education. We have to start right at the beginning to make sure that people graduate with the tools so they can evaluate this stuff properly.
Fred, I don't want people who are listening to think you're just some guy who spent most of your life in a basement with a dimly lit light bulb, writing down things and putting pictures on and string on the wall and trying to piece everything together, then figuring, hey, wait a minute, this is stupid. Anyway, let's go on to the next thing. You're quite the Renaissance man. This is not the only thing you thought about when you were younger, and you did debunk all this anyway. Let's talk about you.
Yep.
There's some fascinating things you've done. In 2000, and again, because I'm a music guy, I have my own syndicated music program, you founded Northern Blues Music, a cutting-edge blues label, which has won many awards. How did this come about, and who are some of the artists you represent?
Well, I've always had a huge interest in music, and I was an investor in a folk music label. And after I decided to retire from the computer industry, I was looking for something to do, and it hit upon me, why don't I start a blues label? And I went to that folk label, and they said, well, we'll instruct you on how to do it. And I started Northern Blues in 2001, early 2001, although it set the stage in 2000. And one of my first artists was Otis Taylor, an amazing blues guy from Denver, Colorado. And that year, his album, White African, was nominated for Album of the Year at the Blues Music Awards. In my first year, I was up for Album of the Year. It was quite amazing. One of my most popular artists is Watermelon Slim, who is an ex-truck driver, an ex-Vietnam War veteran, who lives in Mississippi. And last year, his album, Church of the Blues, was nominated for Album of the Year.
Blues music has been around for a long time, and you talked about Watermelon Slim. It's kind of giving me an impression that the great nicknames are going to die off pretty soon. Blues lasts another 50 years, maybe 100 years. You have new people going in. I wonder what their nicknames are going to be. I don't know. Maybe Broken Cell Phone Sally. I don't know. Maybe people like that.
Yeah, the all sorts of stuff on social media. Who knows? You know, it could be hashtag something.
I want to get back to maybe your earlier influences, though, Fred. Who are some of your favorite early blues people?
Well, I'm a big acoustic blues guy. So, you know, I go right back, of course, to Robert Johnson. But I like Muddy Waters. I like anybody, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. And then on the electric side, I have Freddie King, Albert King, and, of course, B.B. King. I mean, there's just so many. You know, I've got thousands of blues albums at home.
It was a comedy movie, and I want to ask you this because you're a blues guy, and I like to throw this one around on occasion. I enjoyed the Blues Brothers. I had one of the best car chases in music history, two of the funniest people on earth, one of the greatest performers in the history of music in Cab Calloway.
Yep.
But they were actually pretty good. I mean, the band was great behind them. It was the Saturday Night Live band, but Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi were quite excellent as a blues team. And the movie gave a lot of respect to the blues greats.
They were great, and the movie was terrific. I mean, John Lee Hooker was in that movie, Aretha Franklin,
yes.
Ray Charles. I mean, there were just some great people and great performances in that movie. So, you know, I really have to hand it to Belushi and Aykroyd for popularizing the blues. I mean, when their album came up, the Blues Brothers, I mean, I couldn't stop playing that. I mean, every night I would play it. So my hats go off to those two guys.
Fred Litwin, you also started the Free Thinking Film Society. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I was very, you know, when Michael Moore started releasing some of his movies, I got a little upset with some of the stuff he had released. And I noticed somebody in the States had made a movie about Michael Moore that I wanted to show in Ottawa, and the local theaters wouldn't show it. It was called Michael Moore Hates America. And so I decided, you know what, I'll just start bringing in films myself. And I got a group of friends together. We started the Free Thinking Film Society, and we started showing films in Ottawa, mostly documentaries about freedom, liberty, and democracy, and showed over 100 films. I did 4 film festivals, did many book launches, and had an awful lot of fun.
That does sound like fun, Fred. Where can people find out more about the Free Thinking Film Society?
Well, we don't really do that much anymore with Free Thinking Film Society. Once I started getting into writing books.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, we had a venue that we used to show our films in Ottawa, and I had an incident where the Iranian embassy tried to shut down one of my films, and we had a national incident where the RCMP had to be called in because there were some sort of substances found. And it was a national story where the government had to get involved. And once that happened, the venue started raising their prices for me after that, and it started to become prohibitive to show films.
Well, that wasn't very nice, now was it?
It was quite a story. I mean, it really, I covered that in my first book.
Fred Litwin, I want to thank you once again for being with us on Book Spectrum.
Thank you very much. It was great being here.
Once again, Fred's book is called On the Trail of Delusion, Jim Garrison, The Great Accuser. You can find links to buy it on our website, bookspectrum.com, and it's available through many digital outlets.